This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The latest surge in COVID-19 hospitalizations this summer is having a deepening effect in Texas. The state's leadership is insisting on a ban on mask mandates as hospitals are stretched to capacity with COVID-19 patients. The Texas Department of State Health Services says the state is in one of its worst fights it has faced with COVID-19, and mortuary trailers were requested this month in anticipation of a high death toll. Yesterday, President Joe Biden addressed the nation urging vaccinations.
Governors and mayors in California, Maryland, Massachusetts, New York, Oregon, and Washington have all announced vaccination requirements. So let's be clear. Vaccination requirements have been around for decades. Students, healthcare professionals, our troops, are typically required to receive vaccines to prevent everything from polio to smallpox to measles to mumps to rubella. In fact, the reason most people in America don't worry about polio, smallpox, measles, mumps, or rubella today is because of vaccines. It only makes sense to require a vaccine that stops the spread of COVID-19.
So what questions do you have for the experts about the developments in the fight against COVID and about vaccines and the booster? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And you can tweet us at TPRSource and email us at thesource@tpr.org. And that number, 833-877-8255, you can text us at that number as well. We're joined this hour by Apoorva Mandavilli, science and global health reporter for the New York Times. Apoorva Mandavilli, welcome to The Source.
Thanks very much for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Peter Ching-Hong, professor of medicine and infectious disease expert at the University of California, San Francisco. And Dr. Ching-Hong, welcome to The Source.
A pleasure to be on, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Also with us, Caitlin Jedalina, PhD, MPH, epidemiologist with UT Health School of Medicine in Dallas, author of Your Local Epidemiologist blog. Caitlin Jedalina, welcome back to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
Caitlin, so the latest headlines are pretty scary about where we could be within the next month here in Texas. It's forecast that Texas could have an average of death toll of like 800 a week, that we're on a terrible trajectory, and it doesn't seem like enough is being done to trying to bring those numbers down. What do you see?
That's right. You know, Texas is, and the entire South is in a really bad position right now. Transmission is out of control in our community. And with that, married with the relatively low vaccination rates in our community, our hospitals are starting to reach capacity. And with that, will follow deaths as well. And so, no, the outlook doesn't look good, especially in these upcoming weeks.
So, Dr. Peter, talking about the vaccinations, and they were saying this is an epidemic of the unvaccinated, but we do have breakthrough cases of COVID. So talk me through, what does that mean, that we have a breakthrough case of COVID, and what is that case likely to, how will it present itself?
Yeah, so the idea, Dave, is that we changed our paradigm about how vaccines are really thought of in terms of its intent. And to tell you the truth, many of us really thought that the vaccines will be best served by preventing serious disease, hospitalizations, and deaths. And so far, it's holding up in general in the population. But the breakthrough infection, I think, is dispiriting to many people in the population because they thought they were completely immune. And essentially, what it is that Delta is changing the rules. And the way I thought was a great analogy is that the vaccine is a really super great umbrella that you bought in the best store, and it keeps you dry in most cases. But when the thunderstorm is there, you can get a little bit wet, but it's not wet enough that the rain goes inside your body or forces you to go out and buy new clothes. So we are seeing breakthrough infections in the vaccinated population. It's not translating generally into hospitalizations in our country. And you know, I think that the more the population is vaccinated, of course, it's going to represent people seeing more of their colleagues being vaccinated, having breakthrough infections.
And Apoorva Mandavelli at the New York Times reporting on these stories, it seems that the CDC is where are they on trying to create a more, you know, appealing atmosphere for people who are not willing to get vaccinated?
I think, you know, I want to mention one thing about breakthrough infections. We've all been talking so much about these breakthrough infections, but really that's because they're a surprise to us, right? And that includes me. I've been writing a lot about it too. But as you said, this is still very much a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And I think the CDC is trying to make it easier for people to go get a vaccine. But in talking so much about breakthrough infections and in talking about the need for booster shots, I think some people are getting confused and getting the wrong message that vaccines are not effective. And that could not be further from the truth. The vaccines are extremely effective. But the way that some of the messaging is coming across, I think, is being misinterpreted to mean that, for example, we need a booster shot because the vaccines don't work well. And that's not the case.
But even your reporting tells us that in the 90 percentile, even higher here in Texas, of the people who are in our hospitals dealing with COVID-19, they were not vaccinated.
That's correct. And what we're seeing, even in the data that the CDC published yesterday, they published three studies, and all of those studies essentially showed that the vaccines may wane in their effectiveness against infection, but as far as hospitalizations and deaths, they are still holding really firm, and they're not showing signs of weakening. We did hear from the Surgeon General and from Dr. Walensky, the director of the CDC, yesterday, that they are seeing signs, early signs, that the vaccines may be waning against hospitalizations, but we have not seen that data, and perhaps they're privy to data that they haven't released yet. We know that the CDC likes to hold on to some of these data until they're ready. So it may be that they're seeing something that we're not, but at least in the information that we have so far, people who are vaccinated are not ending up in the hospital in any big numbers.
Right. But and to that point, though, one of the big misinformation talking points is, see, vaccines don't work. Why should I be vaccinated if I'm still going to get COVID? Caitlin Jedalina, what do you say to those people?
So vaccines do work, especially if you don't want to end up in the hospital or die from COVID. I think the other misinformation that's, you know, why should I get it if I can still spread it to my kids? And it's true that it looks like with Delta, at least, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated seem to have the same viral load, at least in the beginning, at least in the first few days of infection. But then what we're also seeing is that once that immunity kicks in, the viral load decreases a whole lot faster among the vaccinated compared to the unvaccinated.
All right, we're taking a break. We're asking the experts your questions about the vaccine for COVID-19, about booster shots, third shots, breakthrough cases, what's appropriate for kids and women who are pregnant, what's happening next with COVID-19. If you have a question, call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about the latest developments with COVID-19 and the vaccines and what's being done to limit the spread. Now that here in Texas, we're seeing this historic wave, the surge of infections, and it is bad and it's going to get worse. What can you do to protect yourself and your family? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you're listening and you're still reluctant, you still haven't been vaccinated, give us a call. I would love to hear why that is. Just tell us. Just explain it to us. I would love to hear why that works for you right now and what would it take for you to change your mind. 833-TPR-TALK. Caitlin Jedalina, let me ask you this question. I mean, I think if a person has gotten vaccinated and then they had a breakthrough infection of COVID-19 and they're infectious, to me, I wonder if that person is the scariest person out there, because is it likely that they're going to be spreading virus that's going to be more likely to break through other people who are vaccinated?
That's a good question, and we're not entirely sure. But what's even, you're right, it is a bit scary, and I guess what I'm even more scared about is that vaccinated continue to feel like they're protected, and they are protected against severe disease or death, but it seems that they're very important key in this transmission link. And in order to stop transmission in the community, we really need to get transmission among vaccinated decreased as well. And so that's why it's really important for everyone to really continue to wear masks and remain vigilant. And so we can stop this transmission at every corner.
But Dr. Peter Ching-Hong, it seemed like this virus, I mean, we're dealing with an organism almost that it seems to be getting smarter and at infecting people all the time, simply because of the evolutionary process. It keeps creating these different strains and variants. And when one develops that's really good at infecting people, it's going to do just that. So we have to get smarter as well?
We certainly have to get smarter. We have to get ahead of the virus and its dastardly ways. And we can get smarter. It's always the same answer. I know it sounds like a broken record to the listeners, but vaccinations, 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 but not only vaccinations and super vaccinating part of the country, but vaccinating equitably the world, because you need to do it at the same time so that the virus doesn't continue to surge in some place, create a variant. It's creating a variant every 2 weeks. And when we see the variants of the Greek alphabet, those are the ones that make it to the rogues gallery. But every time there is another one being created. And evolutionists believe that there's something called convergent evolution happening, where notice for most of that pandemic, we hadn't seen or heard of many variants, but you know, the alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, kappa, lambda, they're coming in rapid succession. And you know, the virus is being selected for superpowers that give them a survival advantage of sorts.
Right. So if a variant is not good at being transmitted, then it won't transmit. They're competing against each other to see which variant is going to infect people. And if it's really good at doing that, then it will grab hold of the population and move through it. The question is, they can compete to be more infectious, but will they become more fatal? Dr. Peter Ching-Hong?
That's a great question. And many basic scientists believe that, for a variant to really, emerge, it can only hold on to one of the three superpowers that we think about. So the three superpowers are, is it more transmissible? Does it evade vaccines? And does it make me sicker? So far, they've been really focusing on, the dominant ones have been focusing on the fact that they're very, very, very transmissible, but really minimizing the, can it make me sicker, or, you know, can it really evade vaccines? But they may be, you know, in a quiescent period where one of these other powers would emerge. And I think that would be extremely dispiriting to everyone and could potentially set back, you know, our progress.
Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 833-877-8255. We're asking the experts your questions about the vaccine, about the booster shots, any questions you have about COVID-19. Let's go to Christopher. And Christopher, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this discussion. I have it frequently as a healthcare provider with lots of folks. And I had to reformulate my question, which I think is, most of the conversation and media attention for the drive to get a vaccine is based off fear. We need to get everyone going because Delta variant or because hospitals are overflowing. And it seems to have fallen on deaf ears, at least for the unvaccinated. Does anyone have any idea how we can re-strategize and maybe come up with something that will work instead of a fear-based approach that has seemed ineffective for irrational people?
All right, Christopher, thank you for that. Apoorva Mandavelli, you're the New York Times reporter for science and global health. And do you see a lot of fear being used to try to motivate people? And is there an exhaustion with trying to use fear?
I think Christopher is right that, you know, that argument, you should get vaccinated because otherwise you might get sick or your loved ones might get sick, only goes so far, because the people who are not getting vaccinated are either too afraid or just don't think that COVID is a big deal. And neither of those groups is going to change their mind off of a fear-based argument. I think what we're seeing is a real push towards mandates, and some of that will become easier once the vaccine is fully approved by the FDA. And I think people also need to be really reminded that vaccines are a public health commodity. It's not just about protecting yourself. It's about protecting the community at large. And there is an element of altruism there that even if you yourself may not get sick, you will protect other people. And that's something that we as a country have not done a great job of talking about. This has been true for flu and for other vaccines, but it's just not something that we discuss in any way that appeals to people. I think those are some areas where there's a lot of room to grow.
And Caitlin Jedalina, epidemiologist with UT School, health school and public health in Dallas. I mean, fear, these are scary times. Of course, you know, fear is going to come up, right?
Yeah, these are very scary times. And creating that message and effectively communicating the balance between it's fearful, but we have amazing cheap prevention measures that we can do that continue to protect us. And I think that's really where we need to focus the conversation and really keep a level head, especially in the South where we are surging right now and really need to point people in the correct direction.
Now, President Joe Biden, he addressed the nation yesterday talking about what's happening with COVID-19, trying to encourage and also mandating more people to be vaccinated. Here's what President Biden said about nursing homes.
Our medical experts announced a plan for booster shots to every fully vaccinated American, adult American. You know, this will boost your immune response. Will increase your protection from COVID-19. And it's the best way to protect ourselves from new variants that could arise. The plan is for every adult to get a booster shot 8 months after you got your second shot. Pending approval from the Food and Drug Administration, the CDC's committee of outside experts will be ready to start this booster program during the week of September 20. In which time, anyone vaccinated on or before January 20 will be eligible to get a booster shot.
Dr. Peter Ching-Hung, the booster shot, what's in the booster shot? Is it just more of the same vaccine, or is it different mixture, and why do we need it?
Yeah, so those are all great questions, Dave. So the booster, as it's conceptualized now in giving the third shot for a two-dose series, is exactly the same vaccine or another company's vaccine that is being thought of. Of course, there are other kinds of boosters being developed. There's kind of a one-stop shopping booster where you would put the variant du jour in a sort of multiplex platform with different types of strains, similar to what we do in the influenza vaccine. That's another kind. The other kinds that have been conceptualized are essentially, you know, you have a bad variant circulating, say, in Papua New Guinea 1 year, then you take that code and then you basically immunize everyone that particular year for the variant. So that's a very dedicated booster shot. But the booster that President Biden is talking about is simply the vaccines we have available. You simply go and get another one.
And so we had different vaccines out there, and the Johnson & Johnson one seems to be kind of, I don't know, I kind of eyeball it as maybe the weaker of the three. And should people who got the Johnson & Johnson, should they be more eager to get the booster?
Well, I think that as one of my colleagues said, Team J&J is being sort of left out of the narrative. And it's not because people don't care about them. It's just that we don't have as much data with J&J outcomes or how they do with a booster. But the absence of data doesn't mean that it's not a good idea, as we always say in medicine anyway. Of course, you'd like to see evidence. But we do know that the J&J is pretty good at preventing serious disease with one shot. Many people believe that it's probably best conceptualized as a two-shot vaccine, just like everything else. And, you know, frankly, San Francisco giving the option for J&J recipients to get additional, what they call supplement, not to be confused with booster, I think was a prescient move because it is something that I think would probably be beneficial for durability in the long term.
And so what is your take on that, Caitlin Jedalina?
Yeah, so he's right. You know, we don't have a lot of data, and a lot of J&J recipients are feeling left out. One thing that was really clear yesterday during the White House briefing was that we are looking at the data very closely. We expect J&J people to have to get the booster shot, and hopefully we will know in the next couple weeks or certainly before September 20th. I think a really other important piece of evidence that should be coming out really soon is concurrent to the Johnson & Johnson one-dose clinical trial, we are also doing a two-dose clinical trial of Johnson & Johnson called Ensemble 2. And those results we expected to come out this summer, so I'm still hopeful that those will be coming out very soon and will help give us a little more direction for our J&J folks.
So Apoorva Mandavelli at the New York Times, what is the posture that the Biden administration is taking with the booster shots?
It seems like they're really trying to be very proactive. Yesterday, you know, in the White House briefing, Dr. Rochelle Walensky and the Surgeon General, Dr. Murthy and Tony Fauci, all talked about the need for these booster shots. And they all emphasize that the vaccines still seem to be very good against hospitalizations, but that they are trying to get ahead of the virus. And I think some of that is coming from criticism that the administration has received about being too slow, and criticism that the CDC has received about being too slow. But on the other hand, I've spoken with a lot of experts who think that this is premature, that we don't actually need the boosters quite yet, at least not for anybody who's not, you know, elderly or immunocompromised in some way, and that in trying to maybe win some political points, the administration is making a decision that's not entirely grounded in science.
And so you think that maybe the booster push is a result of the, as an answer for questions about the breakthrough infections?
I think that's part of it. And I think the other part of it is that we are seeing cases surging everywhere in the country, and we are seeing hospitalizations go up in a lot of the country. And there is not any evidence at this point that any of those people are vaccinated. Maybe some small fraction are, but they could all be elderly and immunocompromised. But I think that the Biden administration wants to stave off any criticism that they are not in control of this pandemic.
We're taking a break. When we come back, we'll get to the phones. Steve and Rebecca, if you could hang on, we'll get to your questions when we come back. And our phone line is open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We want to answer your questions that you have about the vaccines, about the booster shots, about the breakthrough cases, about who should be getting the shots. What about vaccines for kids who are younger than 12? When's that going to happen? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about COVID-19 and vaccinations and booster shots, breakthrough cases, and how do we protect our kids. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. And let's go to Rebecca on the phones. Rebecca, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. My husband and I are in our early 60s, and my husband did not work last year because of COVID. We both got vaccinated. He's back to work as a teacher, and he's wearing his mask. He started wearing his N95 today because we've heard that others are just not strong enough. And he said yesterday, get COVID just because I'm in a closed classroom with, you know, and adults, and you know, schools are going to start closing down. And I do want to mention that I have put the booster on my calendar. I and he both will be getting the booster. So it's really just more of a comment of frustration and fear. Really.
Well, Rebecca, let me ask you, do you have some confidence knowing that you have been vaccinated? Do you think that if you do get COVID, if you catch it, that it will be not so severe, it will be a mild case?
Oh, yeah, I do, definitely. I do have that confidence. I would be even more frightened if I was not vaccinated. But it's just very frustrating and scary to think that because of his work, even though he's wearing an N95, there's a good chance he's going to get it.
Rebecca, thank you for the call. Caitlin Jedalina, epidemiologist with UT Health School of Public Health in Dallas. What do you think about Rebecca's concerns and, you know, having her husband in a classroom? How at risk is he?
Yeah, I will mirror that it is a very frustrating time in Texas right now, especially with these schools opening and high transmission rates and feeling a little helpless. First of all, I'm so happy to hear that he and her have the vaccines. That is the number one level of protection. The next, you know, layered approach is the N95 mask. I'm really glad that he switched over to an N95. That is the best protection we are seeing across Delta right now, given a finished study that came out this week. The other thing that he can do in the classroom, if available, is set up fans or open a window. New York Times did an amazing simulation of how much airflow decreases the risk of transmission in a classroom. So getting that airflow is also another layered approach. And if all of those things are done, he is doing the best thing that he can do, not only for himself, but also for the students in the classroom. And if he does get infected, the very high chance it will be mild, given the vaccines. And so I think that may help sleep at night too.
So, Caitlin, N95 mask, now there's a KN95, there's different types of masks. They say they're, you know, I don't know which one is which. How do I know I've got a good mask?
Yeah, KN95s, N95s are very good. And the reason is because of the fit and filtration system. And so if you go under a KN95 or an N95 to a surgical mask, those don't seem to be working as well as against Delta. And then one below that is the cloth masks that just don't show that much protection. And so it really depends on fit and filtration when wearing that mask.
Dr. Peter Chin Hung, we were told originally that, you know, you wear a mask not to protect yourself, but to protect others. And I imagine that's still true.
Yes, it's true. And that's the way we've always conceptualized it in healthcare. That's what the evidence is best at. But you still do get some protection against protecting yourself just because it reduces probably the viral load or the number of viral particles coming through. But like Caitlin was saying, fit is really the name of the game. So if you, you know, tie an extra knot and you have a surgical mask, that's really good. If you need to wear a double mask, these are all strategies to make it a snugger fit. But yes, it's best conceptualized as preventing others from getting infection if you're the one who has infection and you're wearing the mask. But the more people wear the mask, the better it is.
But so Apoorva Mandavelli, science and global health reporter for the New York Times, we keep hearing about how vaccines and their effectiveness may wane over time. And earlier you were saying that they're still probably providing good enough protection that we don't even really need a booster just yet. So, I mean, how do we chart that? How much longer is my vaccine going to be good?
Well, it's a very tough question to ask because we've all been vaccinated at different times, and the data has been really hard to look at for, you know, people of different ages, people of different health conditions, people who've been vaccinated at different times. But what we are seeing so far is that the vaccines are very good. against protecting from hospitalization and death. And the three studies that the CDC published yesterday showed that even though the vaccine seemed to be weakening over time against infection, the effectiveness against hospitalization stayed the same across all the age groups. And I think that's a very important point to remember. So at least so far, the many months that we've been vaccinating in this country, we have not seen a big rise in hospitalizations from vaccinated people. That doesn't mean that it may not happen in the future. There are a lot of experts I've spoken with who think it will not happen just because of the way the immune system works. And we have, you know, not just antibodies, but T cells and B cells and all these other components of the immune system that would kick in. But even if that were to be the case, even if, let's say, a new variant comes across and it's much worse than Delta and somehow evades the immune system, we may need a booster at that point. But we're not there yet, is what I'm hearing from a lot of experts.
Okay, let's go to Marcy on the phones. Marcy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have what might perhaps be a silly question, but I am curious. Given that we have Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson available to us, and now we're talking about getting boosters, I'm curious, has there been any study or is there any data or is it even a thing to mix vaccines? For example, I am fully vaccinated with Pfizer. What would happen if I got Moderna booster? Or what about folks who have had Johnson & Johnson and they now want to have the added protection of Moderna or Pfizer?
All right, Marcy, thank you for the question. I think a lot of people are asking that question. Dr. Peter Chin-Hung, you have an answer?
Yeah, so there is some data with mixing and matching. It mainly comes from the UK because they had to. If you remember in the UK's rollout of vaccinations, they wanted to immunize as many people as possible early in the time when there wasn't a lot of vaccine available. So they not only mix and match, but they lengthened the time between the first dose and the second dose. In the UK, it was one mRNA, generally a Pfizer, and one adenovirus vector vaccine, generally AstraZeneca. And they showed that when you, in their study, when they retrospectively looked at folks that, you know, if you got a Pfizer and then you got an AstraZeneca, or you got an AstraZeneca and then you got a Pfizer, you had as good a protection as if you got two of the same kind. In fact, you know, some experts believe, and this is a study being conducted by the NIH and others now, that sometimes mixing the vaccines may theoretically have an advantage because it shocks the body into seeing something different. So they may respond more vigorously. But at the end of the day, I think the Biden administration is going to go to try to get the vaccine that you got before, because that's kind of where the most evidence is. But if you couldn't get that, it's not a bad idea to get whatever you have available.
Let's go to a voicemail we have. This is from Jeannie.
Hi, this is Jeannie. I was just wondering how many people that are ending up in the hospital for COVID are previously infected.
All right. And so, Caitlin, Jedalina, so these are people who have natural immunity from being previously infected. Are they still ending up in the hospital?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We are seeing that natural infection, you can call it, or natural protection, doesn't seem to work as well against Delta. This is particularly true if that natural infection before didn't result in hospitalization. And so the mild and moderate cases of infection, natural infection, just don't seem to particularly protect against Delta, at least in if they were infected, you know, more than 6 months ago.
Let's go to another caller. We have Percy on the phone. Percy, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for having my call. I was just curious, is there such a test for the Delta variant?
All right, Percy, thank you for that. So Dr. Peter Chin-Hung, you're the doctor, I'm going to go to you. Do you check someone and say, oh, you have the Delta variant, and is that person treated differently?
That's a great question from Percy. So we check variant status subsequently. So it's a second step process, and you basically look for a genetic sequence of the amino acids to help you distinguish what variant. But from a patient perspective, we don't usually check it at the time, and it doesn't really matter because you know, when you come into the hospital sick, if unfortunately you have an infection right now, you have a more than 90% chance of having Delta. And there's no real difference in the way we treat you. Maybe we won't, I mean, the only treatment that might have had a little bit of a cut is one of the antibody treatments, which has been pulled off the market, but everything else works. So second step process, only part of the population is checked, and not really matter in clinical care.
We're taking another break and we'll get back and take your calls. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have the panel of experts who can answer your questions about the booster, about breakthrough cases. When we come back, we'll talk more about kids and the vaccine. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Nursing home and serve people on Medicare or Medicaid, you will also be required to get vaccinated. More than 130,000 residents in nursing homes have sadly, over the period of this virus, passed away. At the same time, vaccination rates among nursing home staff significantly trail the rest of the country. A study showed that highly vaccinated nursing home staff is associated with at least 30% less COVID-19 cases among long-term care residents. With this announcement, I'm using the power of the federal government as a payer of health care costs to ensure we reduce those risks to our most vulnerable seniors.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. That was President Biden yesterday talking about what to do about the spread of COVID-19. And we have a reporter from the New York Times, Apoorva Mandavilli, science and global health reporter. It looks like Biden is looking to use more of his authority as president to get more people vaccinated.
I think that's right. And I think we will see more push towards mandates, especially once the FDA moves ahead with this approval. We've heard a lot about the approval coming in, very quickly in the next few weeks. And I think once that happens, the Biden administration will have much greater leverage in pushing mandates forward. And so will businesses, and so will schools, and so will states. There may be a big difference after that happens. And even at an individual level, I think some people who are afraid will be reassured that the vaccine is safe at that point.
Dr. Peter Ching-Hung, if you could talk a little bit about women who are pregnant, and there seems to be a greater push to have them vaccinated. What is the guidance for that?
So the guidance is emphatically clear at this moment, based on the data we have and the risk of COVID in pregnancy, which is not small. So UCSF actually did a study recently showing that you had a 60% increased risk of preterm birth if you had COVID.
So we lost the call. Caitlin Detalina, if you could pick that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you were saying, there's a lot of evidence showing that pregnant people just don't have an effective immunity wall in the wake of Delta. They're more likely to go to the ICU if they're not vaccinated. They're more likely to have preeclampsia, more likely to die from COVID, more likely to have babies that are born premature or stillborn, and their babies are more likely to be admitted to the neonatal unit. And so it's very clear that ACOG and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, as well as the CDC, strongly recommend vaccines for pregnant people.
So even like if you're late pregnancy, if you're way along, still get vaccinated?
It doesn't matter when you are in what trimester you are and that you're getting the vaccine. Some early evidence has shown that it's actually even better the earlier you get it in your pregnancy because the more opportunity you have to give antibodies to the baby. But really, first, second, or third trimester is great.
And so let me ask you about children, and especially under 12. So if a child is 12 and a week, do they qualify for the vaccine? Because I know the cutoff is 12.
They do, absolutely. On your 12th birthday, as a birthday present, go get the vaccine for your kid. But any younger, they still have to wait for the approval, hopefully by the end of fall.
And Apoorva Mandavilli at the New York Times, there's a lot of attention to schools right now, particularly here in Texas with this ban on mask mandates and the fight over that, but focusing on the science of that. How concerning is it that schools are opening back up? Could those be super spreaders if we don't get this right?
I think it could very well contribute in very big numbers to infections. In fact, there's data out of Mississippi that just since August 9th, when their schools opened, 4,500 students have become infected and almost 1,000 teachers. And they've had tens of thousands of students quarantined because of this. So this is not a trivial concern. We know that the virus in general doesn't seem to make kids all that sick. I mean, in the past, that's definitely been true, but some of that has changed a little bit with Delta, and that's not surprising because of what we've been hearing about Delta, right? It's much more contagious. Early on, the viral load is much higher. There's some evidence that it may be more severe. And so even if that variant is not preferentially attacking kids, it's still going to show more severity in kids just because it's severe for all age groups. And we are seeing that even in Texas. You're seeing the Texas Children's Hospital doctors saying that their wards are full of kids who are sick. And so this is a very big concern as we move into the fall and more schools stay open, especially if they are not following masking, especially if they're not trying to improve ventilation. I want to add one thing to what Caitlin was saying earlier about the measures that schools can take. And one of the things they can do is also invest in some pretty inexpensive air filters. There's some evidence that even, you know, a cheap air filter that costs maybe $20, a few of those in a classroom can make a very big difference to air quality. I think one thing nobody really wants to hear, and hopefully we don't have to go there, is to close schools again, because I think our kids have suffered a lot from not being in school. So there are so many other things we could do to prevent the spread of the virus in schools.
Let's go to Brittany on the phones. And Brittany, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just have a question. What is the opinion of this being like a new normal, like the flu? Like, I've lived my entire life, you know, oh, somebody has the flu and they get over it, or, you know, elderly people are really susceptible to the flu and they may die. Is this going to be our lives from now on? And we're all, like, it's just the new
all right.
sickness that's going around.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong?
Yes, Brittany asked a great question and something that I've been thinking about a lot. I think many scientists believe that this will be the new normal, that we'll coexist with COVID for many, many years, if not indefinitely. There's an animal reservoir of SARS-CoV-2, so we can't really eliminate it. We've only been successful at eliminating one infection in the human history, and that's smallpox. So it's challenging. And the new normal would be not just focusing on vaccines and mitigation measures like masking and testing, but also I think the development of new pills. So like in influenza, we have Tamiflu. If there's an outbreak in the nursing home, we can give all the exposed but asymptomatic patients a relatively benign drug, Tamiflu. So several companies are working on treatment, early treatment pills now that's easy to take. I think we're gonna get better at treating in the hospital because right now we're just teaching an old drug new tricks. But we need to get better targeted therapies. And I think all of that would lead to the exactly what Brittany talked about, a state where we coexist with the virus rather than try to eliminate it.
Let's go to Chad on the phones. And Chad, Chad, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. Yeah, just I guess what's the has there been any evidence that anybody who's been vaccinated or previously exposed are still able to spread the virus?
Caitlin Jedalina?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I will say, so there is evidence right now that the viral load among vaccinated and unvaccinated are about the same in the first about 6 days of infection. I will say, though, that viral load doesn't necessarily mean transmission, and that evidence hasn't come out yet. So for now, we are making the assumption that, yes, vaccinated have the same viral load and thus can transmit it at the same rate as unvaccinated, erring on the side of caution and until we have a better understanding of what this looks like in the science.
And one more caller, we have Dominic. And Dominic, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you all for having me. I was just wondering if you guys could give a little bit of information about the Lambda variant of COVID and whether or not we should be really worried about it.
Apoorva Mandavelli at the New York Times.
I'm not sure that we should be really worried about it yet because we're still coping with Delta, but there are places that are really struggling with Lambda, and Lambda seems to be a little bit similar to the variant that's circulating in South Africa in that it's actually a little bit more resistant to the vaccines than Delta is. So we certainly hope not to see it circulating in big numbers. But at least at the moment, Delta seems to be outcompeting all other variants. So I think we need to worry more about its contagiousness than about Lambda at the moment.
Is it really helpful to Apoorva to think about these variants and label them and promote them? I mean, not promote them, but, you know, we're just still talking about COVID and we treat it as if it was just the same disease. How helpful is it to have information about these variants in the general public?
I mean, it's an excellent question because, you know, we've never really worried. The general public has never really worried about the specific strains of flu. It's important for doctors. It's important for scientists who are working on the vaccines. But do we all need to worry about which variant? Probably not. But I think, you know, given the severity of what people have been experiencing and the desperate need for information and some sense of control over our lives, we do want to know what the enemy is exactly. And just hearing it's the coronavirus may not be helpful if we're hearing suddenly the guidance changing. Oh, you know, you don't have to wear masks indoors, but now you do. And that's because now there's this new variant and it's got a name and it's called Delta. I think that does help shift with the shifting guidance a little bit. But I do look forward to the day when we can all go back to just thinking about it as the coronavirus and not have to worry about specific variants.
And I'm out of time, but I want to get one last quick question to Caitlin Jedalina. What should, I mean, do we still, no more big wedding receptions, no more concerts? How do we, what's going to happen?
What's going to happen? We don't know. Right now, the transmission's really high. So our suggestion is to keep big events down and outside.
Caitlin Jedalina, PhD, epidemiologist, UT Health School of Public Health in Dallas, author of Your Local Epidemiologist blog. Also with us, Dr. Peter Chin Hung, the professor of medicine and infectious disease expert at the University of California, San Francisco. Apoorva Mandavelli, science and global health reporter for the New York Times. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.